Peebles is the Conspiracy Oz podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Tuesday, the 7th of November, 2023. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com. Get with the D program. Now, I wanted to do a recap from last week, just what is happening between Israel and the Gaza Strip and the big money interest. We need to strip it back to why this is happening now, okay? Because this could have happened at any time. I mean, basically, the Americans are involved, the Russians with Syria is involved. This is what this was all about. If you remember the George Soros train wreck from Tunisia to Syria, where he financed all those, the anti-government sources to attack all the people along the way. We're talking about Gaddafi in Libya. We're talking about Saddam Hussein in Iraq, all the way through. And then when they all got to Syria, it stopped because Putin put his foot in the door because he wants the gas from Assad. So that's when it all changed for Putin. That's when he became the bad guy. And this is when NATO started poking around in Ukraine, which started that conflict. You can see now that they wanted to, the globalists want to paint the people that won't toe the line as the enemy. Okay, it's very, very obvious here. So in the case of Israel and the fact that they were attacked by Hamas, even though it looks like a humanitarian thing needs to be done in the Gaza Strip, nothing's happening. Okay, even the Americans are saying, no, there's no ceasefire. We'll just let Israel do what they want. That's really what's happening. So it's not even about them attacking the Palestinians. It's about causing such a horror story that they all move south into the, and I'd like to pronounce this properly now, people, the Sinai Desert. I know people last week would have been going, the Sinai, what's that? It was just a momentary lapse in reason, but yeah, they want them in the Sinai Desert, which is ridiculous. 2 million people just shove them into the desert in a tent city. There's got to be more to it than that. It's not about trying to kill them all. I think it's up to 10,000 dead now. But it's not about killing millions of people because the world will not let them get away with it. They don't even want them to get away with what they've done so far. But what they're doing is causing such a horror show that all the Palestinians run south. Okay? This is happening now because for 10 years or so in the courts, Israel's been trying to get access and stop the Palestinians from getting the gas, okay? So now you can see what's really going on in that area. It is a globalist agenda. That is down the track. What they want to do is cull the population, but in the meantime, they're trying to get energy enough to support the populations they got so they don't go into anarchy, because that's the whole thing here. That's why this is happening on this scale. You can see how quick countries can be wiped out. Look at the Ukraine. Look at the Gaza Strip. It doesn't take much to take them all out. It's very, very simple. It's, within months, they can actually destroy whole places. Of course, Putin could go in and destroy Ukraine if he wanted to, but he doesn't want to wear a war with NATO and the US. So he just does it slowly as it was originally planned, which was just a special operation. So they wanted to declare war on anybody. They're just trying to fix their own backyard up. In the case of Putin, he didn't want NATO there. Russians don't trust anyone. They never have. So you can see there that Putin was once in the ring and is now an outsider, just like Trump and people like that. As soon as you're on the outside and you start doing things different from what they want, you're ousted. You can't get back. And they'll do anything they can to stop you. They just want all the yes men, all the yes people in there so they can get to the point of control of the whole planet quicker. Okay, so that's what is really happening in Gaza. It's not really a religious thing. This is what they use as a context for people to think that that's the reason they're doing it. It's not. But anyway, so what I wanted to do is dissect Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel now, with his connection with Hamas. And because people don't understand, there's a really big connection here. And it's not, they're not like this terrorist organization that Israel didn't want to know about. This is what you've got to understand now, people. Then the false flag looks very, very clear. Okay, so I'm going to start with the Wikipedia what they say, what Hamas is. Now, this is the general term of it. Remember, there's thousands of editors that go into Wikipedia and change things daily. Okay, it always gets changed. It's not like a Britannica, Encyclopedia Britannica, that sits there and another edition comes out years later. This gets changed in real time, so you've got to be very careful with Wikipedia. Now, it says here, and this is just to get an overview of what the globalists want you to know about Hamas, because that's really what Jimmy Wales and Wikipedia is all about. It's all about information they want you to know and what information you can't know. So it says here, it's got Hamas is, it's just got the title, it's an acronym for Islamic Resistance Movement. So that's what it means if it was in English, okay? And it says this is a Sunni Islamist political and military organization governing the Gaza Strip. Now, that's a really important word, people, when it says governing the Gaza Strip. You've got to understand what's going on here. It says of the Israeli-occupied Palestinian territories headquartered in Gaza City. It also has a presence in the West Bank, the larger of the two Palestinian territories in which its secular rival, the Fatah, exercises control. It says in 1987, after the outbreak of the first, intifada against Israel, Hamas was founded by Palestinian imam and activist Ahmed Yassin. It emerged out of the Mujama, al-Islamia, which has been established in Gaza in 1973 as an Islamic charity involved with the Egypt-based Muslim Brotherhood. That's a really important thing too, people. Hamas became increasingly involved in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict by the late 1990s. It opposed, this is also extremely important, it opposed the Israel PLO Letters of Mutual Recognition, which is a Palestinian Liberation Organization. It says, as well as the Oslo Accords. I'm just going to click on that and make sure that that's what that stands for, because that's what I always thought it stood for, Palestinian Liberation Organization. So that's the proper, what the PLO is. And it says, which saw Fatah renounce the use of terrorism and other acts of violence and recognize Israel in pursuit of a two-state solution. Hamas continued to advocate Palestinian armed resistance, and it won the 2006 Palestinian legislative election, gaining a majority in the Palestinian Legislative Council and took control of the Gaza Strip from Fatah. Now, this is really important, people, following a civil war in 2007. Since then, it has run Gaza as a de facto autocratic and one-party state. Now you're thinking, well, how'd that happen? Israel was supporting, what happened here? Who were they supporting? While historically it says seeking an Islamic Palestinian state over the combined territory of Israel, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, rejecting the two-state solution, Hamas began negotiating with Israel and the 1967 borders in agreements it signed with Fatah in 2005-2006 and in 2007. In 2017, Hamas released a new charter that supported a Palestinian state within the 1967 borders without recognizing Israel. Hamas repeated offers of a truce for a period of 10 to 100 years, based on the 1967 borders, as seen by many as consistent with a two-state solution. It says, while others state that Hamas retains the long-term objective of establishing one state in former mandatory Palestine, under the ideological principles of Islamism, Hamas promotes Palestinian nationalism in an Islamic context. It has pursued a policy of jihad, which is armed struggle, against Israel. It has a social service wing called Dawah and a military wing, the Izz ad-Din al-Quzan Brigades. So since the mid-1990s, Hamas has gained widespread popularity within Palestinian society for its anti-Israeli stance. The group's attacks, including suicide bombings against civilian targets and indiscriminate rocket attacks, have led many countries and academics to designate Hamas a terrorist organization. It says a 2018 attempt to condemn Hamas for acts of terror at the United Nations failed. Interesting that. There's probably a reason for that too. It says the Gaza Strip is currently under blockade. Israel and Hamas have fought a number of wars there, you see, including the 2008 to 2009 and in 2012 and in 2014. And now it says in the 2023 war, Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa's Flood, and its fighters broke through the Gaza barrier, attacked Israeli military bases, massacred civilians, and took civilian and soldier hostages back to Gaza. The attack has been described as the biggest military setback for Israel since the 1973 Arab-Israeli War. It says, in response, Israel intensified the existing Gaza blockade and began a large-scale aerial bombardment campaign over the territory in preparation for a ground assault, having announced its intention to destroy Hamas. It says the European Parliament and the US have also called for the elimination of Hamas. Now, this is really important. What you've got to understand here is that, now, actually, I'll just go to the, it's got origins here. I'm going to see how close they are to the truth, because I'll read from another independent source as well in a second. It says, history. This is in the Wikipedia entry for Hamas. When Israel occupied the Palestinian territories in 1967, the Muslim Brotherhood members there did not take active part in the resistance, preferring to focus on social religious reform and on restoring Islamic values. This outlook changed in the early 1980s, and Islamic organizations became more involved in Palestinian politics. The driving force behind the transformation was the Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, a Palestinian refugee from Al-Jura, of humble origins and a quadriplegic. He preserved to become one of the Muslim Brotherhood's leaders in Gaza. It says his charisma and conviction brought him a loyal group of followers upon whom he, as a quadriplegic, depended for everything, from feeding him to transporting him to and from events and to communicate his strategy to the public. In 1973, Yassin founded the social religious charity Al-Mujama, looks like Al-Islamia. It's called the Islamic Center in English, in Gaza, as an offshoot to the Muslim Brotherhood. Israeli authorities in the 1970s and 1980s showed indifference to Al-Mujama Al-Islamia. I'm probably getting this all wrong, the pronunciation, but you get the drift that I'm trying. It says they viewed it as a religious cause that was significantly less militant against Israel than Fatah and the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO. Many also believed that the infighting between Islamic organizations and the PLO would lead to the latter's weakening. Thus, the Israeli government did not intervene in fights between the PLO and Islamic forces. Israeli officials disagree on how much governmental indifference or even support of these disputes led to the rise of Islam in Palestine. And it says some, such as Arya Spitzen, have argued that even if Israel had tried to stop the Islamists sooner, he doubts it could have done much to curb political Islam, a movement that was spreading across the Muslim world. And it says others, including Israel's religious affairs official in Gaza, Avner Cohen, believe that the indifference to the situation fueled the Islamism's rise, stating it was Israel's creation. This is good, people. They're actually starting to tell the truth, stating it was Israel's creation and failure. It says others attribute the rise of the group to state sponsors, including Iran. I knew they had to throw that in there, people. They got to keep the finger wagging at Iran. It says in 1984, Yassin was arrested. This is a quadriplegic. Was arrested after the Israelis found out that his group collected arms. Well, he doesn't have any. I shouldn't have said that. But he was released in May 1985 as part of a prisoner exchange. He continued to expand the reach of his charity in Gaza. Following his release, he set up the Al-Majid, looks like Majid, an acronym for, oh, here we go, another long word, the The Munza Zamat Al Jihad Wa Al Dawa. Oh, I think I got it. Headed by former student leader, Yahya Sinwar and Rohai Mushtaha. I think that's it. Tasked with handling internal security and hunting local informants for the Israeli intelligence services. It says about the same time, he ordered former student leader Salah Shihadi to set up the Mujahideen al-Filastinian, which is Palestinian fighters. I think I'll go for the English words. But its militants were quickly rounded up by the Israeli authorities and had their arms confiscated, no pun included. The idea of Hamas began to take form on December the 10th, 1987. So it gets serious, people. Israel is involved with this, people. It says, when several members of the Brotherhood convened the day after an incident in which the Israeli army truck had crashed into a car at a Gaza checkpoint, killing four Palestinian day workers. They met at Yassin's house and decided they too needed to react in some manner as the protest riot sparking the first infidah erupted. A leaflet issued on December the 14th calling for resistance is considered to mark the first public intervention. Though the name Hamas itself was not used until January 1988. Yassin was not directly connected to the organization, but he gave it his blessing. In a meeting with the Jordanian Muslim Brotherhood in February 1988, it too gave its approval. Too many Palestinians, it appeared to engage more with their national expectations, since it merely provided an Islamic version of what had been the PLO's original goals, armed struggle to liberate all of Palestine, rather than the territorial compromise the PLO acquiesced in a small fragment of mandatory Palestine. Creating Hamas as an entity distinct from the Muslim Brotherhood was a matter of practicality. The Muslim Brotherhood refused to engage in violence against Israel, but without participating in the, looks like the Intifada, I'm going to say it like that, the Islamists tied to it feared they would lose support to their rivals, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and the PLA. So there are all these factions fighting over control, people. They also hoped that by keeping its militant activity separate, Israel would not intervene with its social work. In August 1988, Hamas published the Hamas Charter, wherein it defined itself as a chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood and its desire to establish an Islamic state throughout Palestine. We're taking it right back to 1988. Now, I'm not going to go through the whole history. This is long, people. This is as long as you can expect history to be that far back. So it's going through all the whole state of Israel. And not the whole state of Israel, but the state of Palestine, which doesn't really exist yet. So it's going through all the wars in Gaza and that. And I don't want to get into the politics of that. What I want to know is who supports Hamas, to sort of let it do what it did and get where it is. Remember, it's been running the Gaza Strip for 16 years. Okay. Actually, I'm going to read this bit. I just saw something that caught my eye as I was flicking down that Wikipedia of Hamas, and this is something I hadn't seen before. It's got finances and funding, and I'll get to the article I want to talk about anyway. It says Hamas, like its predecessor in the Muslim Brotherhood, assumed the administration of Gaza's properties, endowments which extended over 10% of all real estate in the Gaza Strip, with 2,000 acres of agricultural land held in religious trusts, together with numerous shops, rentable apartments and public buildings. It says in the first 5 years of the first Intifada, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. It looks like Intifada and FADA. Yeah, have a shot at it. It says the Gaza economy, that's the first Intifada in the Gaza economy, 50% of which depended on external sources of income, plummeted by 50% as Israel closed its labor market and remittances from the Palestinian expatriates in the Gulf countries, and it dried up following the 1991-92 Gulf War. This is why I'm reading this, people, the only reason I'm reading this. At the 1993 Philadelphia conference, Hamas leaders' statements indicated that they read George H.W. Bush's outline of a new world order as an embodying a tacit aim to destroy Islam. Now, isn't that interesting? Remember when Bush said that? Bush Senior, and he goes, I can see coming a new world order. And everyone went, oh, no. Well, Islam got it wrong. They thought it was like a pointing the finger at them. You know, a new world order. Well, it's actually partly true because the new world order doesn't want any religion. So they're actually on the ball, the Islamists, when they realize that Bush wanted to eradicate religion. They do. That is actually a truth. So, you know, kudos, hats off to the Muslims for seeing it for what it was way back then in that time in 1992. And remember, that was around the time when they released Agenda 21. They had their meeting in Rio and put it pen to paper so everyone could see in black and white what they actually wanted to do with global warming, the whole kit and caboodle, everything they're doing now, pushing the environmental sustainability to close down businesses and get a central bank digital currency going so they can control everyone from a central source. It's just really, really obvious. Now, I'm going to flick down. I'm not even halfway through that Wikipedia, so this is a big, big story, all right? But it's being used. These people and their religion is being used to, first of all, extract all the resources, and then secondly, to control that whole area and put religion as a sideline. Remember, there's more Muslims, what I was told, in the part of the world where I am in Australia, in Indonesia than in the Middle East. There's like 300 million of them. So that's an interesting point too, to know that it's a powder keg all around the world. It's not just in the Middle East, okay? So this is dangerous because they can fuel the fire with these Hamas and the Muslims in general just by getting the red flag waving. This is the new world order. That way they can attack internally everybody. You see, just like the terrorism when they were blowing themselves up and all that, and you had ISIS and you had, what was the other one? You had Osama bin Laden with the whole, what he was doing with Al-Qaeda. If you remember all that, this all spawned from those areas. And lots of bad things have happened since. Whole countries have been destroyed. So you got to understand it's not just the US. People go, oh, it's the US. No, it's what's called the West, okay? It's like, and it's not just the West anymore. They have been trying to drag China, Russia, India, all the countries into their net. This is what they're trying to do with the New World Order. They're trying to get everyone interconnected so it can be controlled from a central source. Now, I originally thought it would be three zones. I still sort of think it could be. If this push for a central bank digital currency virtually fails, they're going to have to go back to Plan A, which is the three different zones in the world, starting from, say, the Russian-controlled European zone right down to Africa, absolutely, the Chinese, Indian, Australian, and all the way down through the South Pacific, control from that angle, and then you've got the US controlling Canada, Mexico, right through to South America and the bottom of that. That's the three zones. I even had a currency for the US one, which is going to be called the Amira. You can look all this stuff up. It's not like, and so you can see the Chinese is already, their currency is already starting to overtake the American currency. So they could easily dominate Asia with their currency. That's just a no-brainer. With the Russians, that's different because Putin stopped the train wreck in Syria because he wanted the gas. That's what slowed everything down. That's what stopped it all and made it messy. And that's why the globalists are not happy, because they're having to do things rashly. They're not thinking now, and they're making rational mistakes. And people are starting to see the cracks in the wall. That's why a lot of people now are starting to see through the Truman Show and understand there's something bigger going on here than just the TV news and the sitcoms. There is something much larger going on around that, that's controlling all people's lives. People are just collateral damage to these people. They don't care if they wipe out whole nations. They couldn't care less. So you do have to pay attention to this now, because it is possible for them to do that, whereas in the past it wasn't. Now it is, okay? Whether it's going to be a pandemic or whether it's going to be a nuclear war, who knows? They can do this now where they couldn't do it before. So it's a more dangerous world than it ever was before. Even when the Cold War was at its height, this is far worse now. And it doesn't appear to people, because most people are, you know, I just want a four-day week. I don't want to have to work hard. Yet people want to actually kick back now at the worst time when things, well, we just had an interest rate rise go up today in Australia. So I'm just saying the real world is ready to sledgehammer us. And unless we're at least got our head partly out of the sand, we're going to get buried. Really big time. Buried alive. This is dangerous times, people, so you need to be a little bit aware. Now, as I said, I'm not going to read the whole Wikipedia because that's crazy. I am flicking through it because I haven't read it yet. And I just wanted to see what they said in it, to see what the people, because everyone will be Googling it, everyone will be going to Wikipedia and reading exactly what I'm reading if they want the full story. But I tell you what, get ready. The full story is like a book, people. It's pretty full on. But you can see that they're now trying to paint Hamas as the bad guys, the Palestinian civilians as the victims, and the Israelis as the perpetrators. When you really think about it, what initially happened to set all this off was the initial attack against school kids at a dance where hundreds of them were killed. That was your initial false flag. That was the initial let's get them. Okay, this is like when World War II, you can look all this up, Hitler dressed up his soldiers as Polish in a radio station and got the German soldiers, got the Polish to shoot at the Germans first. So they said the Polish started the war, which is absolutely ludicrous. But that's what he did. That's a fact. So they need a powder keg to start the ball rolling. Once the ball's rolling, people just take sides. That's just how it is. Tit for tat, red team, blue team. There's nothing you can do about it. Just, that's what they bank on that, because they want to make sure you don't do what I'm doing and what you're listening to. They don't want you to know about that, because that's like, oh, that's irrelevant. Just get on the bandwagon. Okay? Very dangerous stuff. And what happens is what? Collateral damage. People just die. And it's usually civilians, as what they've been saying. So anyway, I'm just I'm getting down to where it's got criticism. Now, this is interesting. This is Hamas. This is their Wikipedia. The criticism is four lines. So it says here, I'll just read this because this is interesting, because you've got to understand that Hamas is serving a purpose. It says, aside from its use of political violence in pursuit of its goals, the Palestinian political and military group Hamas has been widely criticized for a variety of reasons, including the use of anti-Semitic hate speech by its representatives, its specific use of human shields and child combatants as part of its military operations, its restriction of political freedoms within the Gaza Strip, and human rights abuses. That's your four lines, people. Now, this is interesting because I didn't know this was in the Wikipedia, but it's got support. Israeli policy towards Hamas. Now, this is interesting because what I'm about to read coincides with this. So I'm really interested to see what these editors of Jimmy Wales's Wikipedia want you to think. It says Benjamin Netanyahu, now that's a very important word, people, had been Israel's Prime Minister for most of two decades preceding the 2023 Israel-Hamas war, and was criticised for having championed a policy of empowering Hamas in Gaza. This is all true, people. I'll read it right after this too. This policy was part of a strategy to sabotage a two-state solution by confining the Palestinian Authority to the West Bank and weakening it. This is true, by the way, people, and to demonstrate to the Israeli public and Western governments that Israel had no partner for peace. This criticism was levelled by several Israeli officials, including former Prime Minister Ehud Barak. And it says, the former head of Shin Bet Security Services, Yuval Diskin, Saudi Arabia and the Palestinian Authority were also critical of Israel under Netanyahu for allowing suitcases of Qatari money to be given Hamas. Now, that is the smoking gun, and that is true. It says, in exchange for maintaining the ceasefire, the Times of Israel reported after the Hamas attack that Netanyahu's policy to treat the Palestinian Authority as a burden and Hamas as an asset had blown up in their faces. In 2019, Benjamin Netanyahu said at a meeting of his Likud party, anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state has the support bolstering Hamas and transferring money to Hamas. This is part of our strategy to isolate the Palestinians in Gaza from the Palestinians in the West Bank. There it is, people. I'm so happy that Jimmy Wales let Wikipedia tell the truth. Even though it is in the public domain, doesn't matter. The editors in there that are pro-Israeli might have got in there and edited that out. Okay, you can always find it again on archive.org with the Wayback Machine search bar. Just type in a website or copy and paste a website and it will give you the whole history of the website way back from 10, maybe more years. And you can just see if it's been edited and what they took out. I do it all the time, people. It's on conspiracyoz.com on the right-hand side of the widget bar. Scroll down and you'll see it. Archive.org. What a brilliant site. So you can see here it says, a poll conducted in 2021 found that 53% of Palestinians believed Hamas was the most deserving of representing and leading the Palestinian people, while only 14% preferred Abbas's Fatah party. I almost said Abba then, it looks like Abba. At the same time, a majority of Gazans saw Hamas as a corrupt as well, but were frightened to criticize the group. Polls conducted in 2023 found that support for Hamas among Palestinians was around 31%. So it's got public opinions of Hamas deteriorated after it took control of the Gaza Strip in 2007. Prior to the takeover, 62% of Palestinians had held favourable view of the group, while a third had negative views. According to a 2014 PW Research, which is a Pew Research, just prior to the 2014 Israeli-Gaza conflict, only about a third had positive opinions and more than half viewed Hamas negatively. Furthermore, 68% of Israeli Arabs viewed Hamas negatively, and in July 2014, 65% of Lebanese viewed Hamas negatively. In Jordan and Egypt, roughly 60% viewed Hamas negatively. It's going through them all. It says Turkey, 80%. Tunisia, 42%, and they're trying to get people to realise that Hamas is not liked. But that's all running around the 50%. There's not a really, it could swing at any moment. I'd like to do that poll again right now and see who they supported. That would be very interesting, people. And it says Hamas popularity surged after the war in July, August 2014, with the polls reporting that 81% of Palestinians felt that Hamas had won that war. A June 2021 opinion poll found that 46% of respondents in Saudi Arabia supported rocket attacks on Israel. 46, nearly one in five, said, yeah, go and bomb them. Unbelievable, isn't it, people? But these are all just polls where they interview 1,000 people. So you can't take, you can only take it with a grain of salt. But Qatar giving money to Hamas with Israelis' blessings, in particular Benjamin Netanyahu. Okay, I'm not going to read any more because I'm only halfway through that Wikipedia. It's huge. It just goes on and on. I don't want to read any more. What I'm going to do now is jump into the article I wanted to read. Now, last week I let a fellow called Michael Jadowski talk on his site, theglobalresearch.ca, about his opinion on what is happening there. And I thought his take on it was pretty much on the ball. I couldn't figure out any way or any other reason why it isn't happening now. It's happening now because they want the gas. You got to understand that around the world, the whole emphasis on renewables and getting away from the combustion engine is going to prevail because it's got to become part of a modern grid where everything can be read in the grid like an object. Okay, if they can't get everything into the grid, then things are outside of it. They can't control. You're not in the matrix. They don't like that. So this is a worldwide thing. It's not just in the West, in Australia, UK, the US and Europe, where they want electric cars and all that. No, they want them everywhere, especially Saudi Arabia, countries like that, where they're fairly advanced with their technologies. They want this stuff. And so they need these whole areas that are unmapped, regionalized to be inside this whole, and what a better way to do it than force all the Palestinians into the desert in tents where they can be monitored through this surveillance system because they'll all have to sign up if they want to eat, you see? And that's just a brilliant way to do it. And they're all, in a sense, they're all helpless in that situation too. So that's going to be much easier for them to do it. Remember what happened in World War II? where Hitler went into the Poland. Of course, he said Poland shot at them first, but sure, Adolf, sure. He went in there and he created the ghettos all through Germany and Poland where they would section off parts of the cities, like Warsaw and that, and only the Jews were allowed in certain parts where they were all starved to death virtually. I mean, that's another way of petitioning off the people they want to get at, you see? It's the same thing they want to do here in the Sinai Desert in Egypt. That's what they want to do, put 2 million people in the desert in tents and then go and pillage all the gas reserves. That's what it's all about, you see? But it also works for the globalist agenda in the future because they can control the region, okay? It's not about oil anymore, it's about lithium, okay? But they still got to control the sheeple, and this is how they're going to do it there, because that conflict's been going on for as far back as we can all remember, and it'll probably keep going on, but they want to put a stop to it, okay? Remember, it's a religious context. It's very hard to control people's thinking when they're thinking with their heart and not their head because they're in a religious context. Okay, and they get angry, just like Northern Ireland with the Republicans there. And it's the same thing, people. It doesn't matter if you're from the Middle East or Europe or anywhere. It's just as powerful. So the globalists and their agenda 2030, there is no room for religion. Okay, there's no room for nationalism, no borders. They want to make sure we're all on the grid at the same time, readable in real time all around the world. That's the plan. I think it's absolutely bogus. It can't happen. Nature won't allow it because of the chaos theory. Every time they think they've got their patterns in order and everything's rolling along, bang, along comes an anomaly they can't control. So this is what I'm saying. We have to recognize what they're trying to do, not just the little Band-Aid approaches as they're moving towards it. We need to see and expose the jigsaw puzzles for what they are. The Gaza Strip is just a tiny jigsaw in the whole New World Order scheme. Okay, it really, really is. But it's been a thorn in the side of the New World Order since then because of the religious context. They have used that for a means to an end, but now it's coming to an end. Okay, so this is a solution to get the Israeli army to move them all out of the Gaza Strip, which then they can't get as a Palestinian state, which is all what Netanyahu wanted to do. That's why he was funding Hamas. And that's what I'm saying, indirectly through Qatar. Let me read the article now, which confirms all that. All right. Now, this is from globalresearch.ca. Now, I know I read a lot of it last week, but it's very relevant right now. This is a big powder keg. Okay. Even if you go to conspiracyoz.com right now and look at the live map on the left-hand side of the widget bar between it's actually in real time of what is actually happening on the ground there in a time order. So you can actually look at the map, and I told you about this last week with all the symbols all over it. Now, last week I was saying, oh, there's a skull symbol and there's a bomb symbols and all that. Well, there's skull symbols all over it now, and a lot of it's in the north. So you can see now that they're trying to drag Hezbollah, which is the Lebanese faction, into the war as well. Because it's all part of the Muslim Brotherhood, which came originally from Egypt. So this is a faction of people that have been around a long time that are very anti-Israeli. Remember, it's not Israeli, it's Jewish, anti-Jewish. That's what they are. Remember, Israel was only formed in, I think, 1948. Before that, that was a Jewish factions. So this has been going on a lot longer than Hamas and Israel. This is what I've been trying to say. So the globalists use these factions to get a means to an end of what they want in that area at the time. Right now, they don't need anything in the area because they're not after oil. They do want gas. Gas is another commodity not targeted by the greenies and the Save the Planet people and the sky is falling. Not yet. They're going to hit diesel first, then gas, gasoline, petrol, then they'll hit gas last because we're going to have no energy, people. The renewables are not going to work, not even the lithium batteries, because they're going to have nothing to power them. You know, a Powerwall battery that you can get from Elon Musk, from Tesla, will last about 10 years, and then it dies. You got to buy another one for $10,000 to $15,000. Good luck with that. That's to power a house. Same ones are in cars. After 10 years, the battery dies. Just like your phone, people. What are you going to do? Just toss it out the window? That's what happens. People don't get it. I saw an article on on the ABC News this morning before I went to work. I saw one of the interviewers. I call her the frump on ABC. She wears funny clothes all the time, and she's interviewing a woman about recycling batteries. And I said, say it. Go on, say the one-ton battery in a car. Never even got to it. Talking about the tiny batteries that people get stuck in their throats. And then the other batteries, that's all they talked about. And I thought, it's coming. They're going to have to debate this soon, you know. It's a bit like the bushfires that have gone off all around Australia, and now all the reports are coming through, it's all arson. I mean, I'll read that off later if I've got time, but you just can't make this stuff up. It's the real world. It's all smoke and mirrors. You know, it's what they want you to parrot at the time when they want you to say it, just to get the ball rolling. And you get all your Twitterers. I know it's called X, but we all still call it Twitter. I don't use it. But all those social media things hum every time they want it to hum. It's so true, but it's just, there's nothing more to say about it. It's just people are parrots. They just love to get it wrong. Because half the time when you hear a story, you don't tell it the full story. Then the next story gets twisted. And by the time it gets to the end, it's fantasy. If it wasn't fantasy to start with, it's definitely fantasy at the end. That's absolute. Now, before I get into the article I wanted to talk about, because I'm segueing back out again, because I am looking at the live map right now. It's got 22 minutes ago. So this is on this is Tuesday, the 7th of November 2023. And this is probably getting late into the afternoon. It says 22 minutes ago, 20 killed and dozens wounded in an Israeli raid on a residential building in Khan Yunis, which I think is in the north. I'm just going to zoom out and see where we are in Khan Yunis, and I think I've zoomed out way too far, and it is. It's, I think I've clicked the wrong skull. There's all these skulls all over the map, so I'm just going to try and find Khan Yunis, which may not be in the north, actually, now that I look at it. This is a brilliant thing to look at, this live map, on what is happening in the Gaza Strip right now. So I'm just seeing, it might have been in, actually, the Gaza Strip, because I think that's what I was looking at, and I've zoomed too far out. Easy to do with the mouse when you zooming in and out. Now, I've actually lost that skull, so I don't know where it is. The skull symbols represent, obviously, people have died. So that's why I clicked it. So I think I'll find it again. No, I look like I'm lost. Look, there's so many circles of incidents happening there now. It's actually hard to find where I was. I'm thinking Khan Yunis. I can't remember where that is, but I think I'll try and find it again. Since it was 22 minutes ago, what you do on the right-hand side of the scroll bar of the live map, it's livemat.com. It actually has a time, it's like a time capsule. So you can just scroll all the way back to the beginning and it should go back to the, there it is. So it is. So it's in, if I click the skull, it should go to the map, and it does. So if you click the, on the right hand side where it tells you this thing, this incident happened 22 minutes ago, if you click on the symbol, it'll take you to the map. So you don't have to go looking for it like I did. Silly me. So Khan Yunis, just so you know where it is probably in southern Gaza Strip. So this is where all the people are trying to escape. Not good people. And they've also got videos in there. It's like a mini Twitter. In fact, I think it links to Twitter from memory with the videos. But an hour ago, it says a report of an attempted stabbing attack at the, looks like the Kualadinya checkpoint. The terrorist was shot in the leg, no injury. So they report everything. Every incident is there, it goes in, people. It's actually a brilliant sort of keeping up with it, if you want to put it that way. So the latest one I saw was the one I just quoted before, and I'm seeing where it goes to. I'm just clicking on it to see if it goes to. And no, it's actually within the actual livemap.com. So they got their own sort of mini Twitter thing. They've also got links to Twitter and Facebook in there too. But it's such a brilliant thing to look at, to understand what is happening with these conflicts, and you can see the wider areas. Now, there's skulls popping up inside the West Bank, so I'm very curious about that, because that's the other Palestinian territory. So I'm just going to click on it and see what it says. So 3 hours ago, this is from the Palestinian Agency, one person was killed and two injured by Israeli forces, gunfire north of Hebron in the West Bank. So they've already... obviously, the ground forces are moving into those areas as well, which is actually not the Gaza Strip. There's actually another skull, so I'm going to click on that symbol. And this is also 3 hours ago, and I think it's the same. Oh, no, there it is. 3 hours ago, Israeli raids target a house and a wood warehouse in Gaza City. So that's not actually the right one, because that's in Gaza City. So I think it's the same report, the 3-hour one. One person killed. I click on it again. One person killed. So it's two different reports of the same thing. I suppose there lies the what you need to study when you look at it to make sure you're not reading the same thing twice like I just did. But there's also the bombings that shows all that. And you can go to the Israel, Ukraine-Russian war and see exactly the same thing, and you should see what's happening there. Of course, you don't hear about that news anymore because it's not favoured by the press tube media at the moment. The good story is at the Gaza Strip, which I'm actually going to rename the Gaza Strip, simply for the pun that there's gas in that water and they want it. And this is what this war is now about. It's about getting rid of the people, extracting the gas for the future, and then distributing it between the US and all its allies, including Australia was at one stage there. I don't know if they've still got their hand out, but I because we've got Mr. Albo, our Prime Minister, is over in China at the moment. So who knows what side of the fence Australia's on these days, because I certainly don't know. Politics is all, it's all part of the same cabal, people. If you see it like that, you can really see there's no real divisions. There are divisions with the religious side, as we can see in what's happening with Israel and Gaza, but not really. It's on a people level. If you look above the people, it's just a chessboard. This latest report from Al Jazeera, I just grabbed that, 7th of November 2023, aljazeera.com. It's got Israel-Hamas war live. The United Nations says tragedy of colossal proportions in Gaza. Now, I hate to tell you people, the United Nations is an arm of the globalists. So that's just, they're just saying that. It has no meaning in it whatsoever. It's just a headline. And it says, 1 month since the start of the war, the UN agency says tragedy of colossal proportions unfolding in Gaza, where people are denied aid, killed and bombed out of their homes. It says at least 16 people killed in overnight Israeli attack on Rafah, with several casualties also reported in Khan Yunis bombing. And then it's got, reads them on, it says, UN Chief Antonio Guterres says Gaza is becoming a graveyard for children as he renews demands to reach the elusive ceasefire. They're not going to do it. They actually asked Netanyahu, who said no ceasefire. They asked Anthony Blinken, who's from the American side, and he said no ceasefire. See, they want this to happen. No one is going to help them. Do you understand, people? No one is going to help them. So this is meant to happen. This was a false flag and it has repercussions, and they're going to clear Gaza. And they really are, because people are going to run for their lives as more and more of them die. It's up to 10,000. So it just says here, well, it's just about to say it. It says, PM Benjamin Netanyahu opens to little pauses, suggests Israel will have responsibility for Gaza security for indefinite period after the war. There you go. More than 10,000 Palestinians in Gaza killed in Israeli attacks since October the 7th. In Israel, the death toll over the same period stands at more than 1,400, which is roughly the surprise attack. And that's it. So you can see, people, that this is definitely a false flag. They were never going to win this. So bags of gold passed to, and this is what I'm getting to, portions of Hamas that are linked to Israel. And that's what's happening. So I'll just get a hold of that story now, one sec. So if you go to conspiracyelse.com like I have, I put up a story called Gaza Gas. It says, is the Gaza-Israel fighting a false flag? They let it happen. Their objective is to wipe Gaza off the map. It says, early Saturday, October the 7th, 2023, Hamas launched Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, led by Hamas military chief Mohammed Dieff. On the same day, Netanyahu confirmed a so-called state of readiness for war. It says military operations are invariably planned well in advance, and it says see Netanyahu's January 2023 statement below. And this is what I'm getting to. Was Al-Aqsa, it looks like Aqsa or Aqsa, I can't even say it, AQSA, good luck. Al-Aqsa storm a surprise attack, U.S. intelligence says they weren't aware of any impending Hamas attack. Well, of course not. One would have to be almost hopelessly naive to buy the corporate state media line that the Hamas invasion was an Israeli intelligence failure. Mossad is one of, if not the most powerful intelligence agency on the planet. Did Netanyahu and his vast military and intelligence apparatus, Mossad El Atel, have foreknowledge of the Hamas attack, which was resulted in countless deaths of Israelis and Palestinians? Was a carefully formulated Israeli plan to wage an all-out war against Palestinians envisaged prior to the launching by Hamas of Operation Al-Aqsa Storm? This was not a failure of Israeli intelligence, as conveyed by the media, quite the opposite. It says, evidence and testimonies suggest that the Netanyahu government had foreknowledge of the actions of Hamas, which have resulted in hundreds of Israeli and Palestinian deaths, and they let it happen. It says Hamas fired between 2,000 to 5,000 rockets at Israel, and hundreds of Israelis are dead, while dozens of Israelis were captured as prisoners of war. In the ensuing air response by Israel, hundreds of Palestinians were killed in Gaza. It says, following the Al-Aqsa Storm operation on October the 7th, Israel's defense minister described Palestinians as human animals and vowed to act accordingly as fighter jets unleashed a massive bombing of the Gaza Strip, home of 2.3 million Palestinians. And then it says a complete blockade of the Gaza Strip was initiated on October the 9th, 2023, consisting in blocking and obstructing the importation of food, water, fuel, and essential commodities to 2.3 million Palestinians. It's an outright crime against humanity. It's genocide. So this is premeditated. They knew what they were getting after the result. And it's false flag people. It's worth noting that Netanyahu's military actions are not targeting Hamas. Now, that's really important. I'm going to say that again, because this is something you do need to understand. It is worth noting that Netanyahu's military actions are not targeting Hamas. Quite the opposite. He is targeting 2.3 million innocent Palestinian civilians in blatant violation of the four basic principles of the law of armed conflict. And they've got a link to that too. It says, respect for the protection of civilian population and civilian objects, schools, hospitals, residential areas. The parties to the conflict shall at all times distinguish between the civilian population and combatants, and between civilian objects and military objectives, and accordingly shall direct their operations only against military objectives. And it's got, ironically, according to Scott Ritter, and there's a link, Hamas has acquired US weapons in Ukraine. That's very interesting. This was not a surprise attack. And it says, was the Hamas attack a false flag? Now, this is someone that was in the Israeli army. And she says, I served in the IDF 25 years ago in the intelligence forces. There's no way Israel did not know what was coming. A cat moving alongside the fence is triggered. So in other words, they're talking about the fence that separates the Gaza Strip from Israel. And a cat would set off the surveillance instruments. They would just go off. The alarms would ring. So how did they get to blow the perimeters up and then drive through and then kill literally 1,400 people, just mow them all down, just like that? And like I said, some survivors were still hiding 8 to 10 hours later. Where were the forces, the most advanced intelligence military on the planet? Where were they to be seen? Nowhere. So it says, and this it actually says on the next line, what happened to the strongest army in the world? It says, how come border crossings were wide open? Something is very wrong here. Something is very strange. This change of events is very unusual and not typical for the Israeli defense system. To me, this surprise attack, this is the Israeli ex-Israeli soldier, seems like a planned operation on all fronts. She says, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I would say this feels like the work of the deep state. Now, this is a significant line, and I put it up in red. She says, it feels like the people of Israel and the people of Palestine have been sold once again to the higher powers that be. There you go. That's the New World Order right at the top of the pinnacle is directing all these actions. And that was a statement by Efrat Fenixon, former Israeli Defense Force intelligence, October the 7th, 2023. And it says, ironically, the media, the NBC, is now contending that the Hamas attack bears hallmarks of the Iranian involvement. Because that's what they're after. That's who the Americans want to target. Now, this is the part I wanted to read. It's the history, the relationship between Mossad and Hamas. All right, so that's Israel and Hamas. What is the relationship between Mossad and Hamas? Is Hamas an intelligence asset? There is a long history. Hamas, which actually stands for Harakat al-Mag, looks like Maqwa, oh, this is hard, people. Maqawama, oh, I can't say it. M-U-Q-A-W-A-M-A. Good luck with that. I'm going to stick with Hamas, not the long one, because it's too hard to say. It means in English the Islamic Resistance Movement. Okay? And it was founded in 1987 by Sheikh Ahmed Yassin. I think I read this earlier anyway in Wikipedia. It was supported at the outset by Israeli intelligence as a means to weaken the Palestinian Authority. So that's it in black and white, as opposed to what Wikipedia said, where it's all drawn out. This is exactly what we need to hear. It says, thanks to Mossad, Israel's Institute for Intelligence and Special Tasks, Hamas was allowed to reinforce its presence in the occupied territories. Meanwhile, this is Yasser Arafat's Fatah movement for national liberation as well as the Palestinian left was subjected to the most brutal form of repression and intimidation. If you remember back in the 70s, Yasser Arafat, that was the big deal back then. And I put this in red. Let us not forget that it was Israel which in fact created Hamas. So it says, according to Zeev Sternel, historian at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, Israel thought that if it was a smart ploy to push the Islamists against the Palestinian Liberation Organization. Now, I read that earlier in Wikipedia. It says, the links of Hamas to Mossad and U.S. intelligence have been acknowledged by the Republican Ron Paul in a statement to the U.S. Congress. Hamas was started by Israel. And he's got a question mark. It says, you know Hamas, if you look at the history, you'll find out that Hamas, I'll put this in red, was encouraged and really started by Israel because they wanted Hamas to counteract Yasser Arafat. And that was from Ron Paul, 2011. And it says, what this statement entails is that the Hamas is and remains an intelligence asset, namely an asset to intelligence agencies. And it says, instead of trying to curb Gaza's Islamists, that's better, from the outset, says Mr. Cohen, Israel for years tolerated and in some cases encouraged them as a counterweight to the secular nationals of the Palestine Liberation Organization and its dominant faction, Yasser Arafat's Fatah. There you go. There's more to it. I'll just see if I can get the rest of it. But you can see it's getting to, I'm trying to look for the part where it says Netanyahu actually encouraged it all. So that's what I'm trying to find next. One sec. Now, just what if you want to know what the article is, this is called, and it's from globalresearch.ca, is the Gaza-Israel fighting a false flag? They let it happen. Their objective is to wipe Gaza off the map. So it's still related to the video I talked about last week as well, as the links on that those stories too at the three videos. It's pretty much the same thing, but I'm trying to clarify it so it's a bit easy to get to the cut to the chase, you know. So in this particular article, what I wanted to do is establish the fact that Israel knew they were going to attack. It was a false flag, and now they've put this operation together to clear the 2 million people out and then get their hands on the gas. That's it, in a nutshell. So it says here from the same article, how Israel helped to spawn Hamas. And it says the Hamas partnership is confirmed by Netanyahu. The cat is out of the bag. And it says, anyone who wants to thwart the establishment of a Palestinian state has to support bolstering Hamas and transferring money to Hamas. That's, and it says, Netanyahu told a meeting at his Likud party looks like NASSAT members in March 2019. And that was quoted in the Wikipedia, which surprised me. It was in there. And he says, Netanyahu, this is part of our strategy to isolate the Palestinians in the Gaza from the Palestinians in the West Bank. And that's from Hartz. It's actually at Haaretz, October the 9th, 2023. And it says, does this statement not suggest that Netanyahu and his military intelligence apparatus are responsible for the killings of innocent Israeli civilians? Big question mark. Then it says support and money for Hamas. It's got transferring money to Hamas on behalf of Netanyahu is confirmed by the Times of Israel, October the 8th, 2023. And it says Hamas was treated as a partner to the detriment of the Palestinian Authority to prevent Abbas from moving towards creating a Palestinian state. Hamas was promoted from a terrorist group to an organization with which Israel conducted negotiations through Egypt, and which was allowed to receive suitcases containing millions of dollars from Qatar through the Gaza crossings, which I've already read in the Wikipedia, which I was actually glad to read all that they actually stated the truth, because sometimes it's very hard to get the truth out of Wikipedia. Now it says, the dangers of military escalation. It says, let's be under no illusions. This false flag operation is a complex military intelligence undertaking carefully planned over several years in liaison, I think that's how you say it, and coordination with US intelligence, the Pentagon, and NATO. In turn, this action against Palestine is already conducive to a process of military escalation, which potentially could engulf a large part of the Middle East. Israel is a de facto member of NATO with a special status since 2004, involving active military and intelligence coordination, as well as consultations pertaining to the occupied territories. Military cooperation with both the Pentagon and NATO is viewed by Israel's Defense Force as a means to enhance Israel's deterrence capability regarding potential enemies threatening it, mainly Iran and Syria. The premise of NATO-Israeli military cooperation is that Israel is under attack. Does Israel's agreement with the Atlantic Alliance obligate NATO to come to the rescue of Israel? Under the doctrine of collective security, Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, and there's a big question mark. In recent developments, US military deployments in the Middle East are ongoing, allegedly to avoid escalation. So this is not going to end well, people. This is, and it says there's always a risk that nations and or organizations hostile to Israel will try to take advantage, and that includes, for instance, organizations like Hezbollah or a country like Iran. So this is a message to countries and organizations hostile to Israel that they should not try to utilize the situation. And the United States has deployed or is deploying more military forces in the region, not least to deter any escalation or prevent any escalation of the situation. That's NATO, October the 12th, 2023. And it's got Netanyahu's new stage, the long war against Palestine. It says Netanyahu's stated objective, which constitutes a new stage in the 75-year-old war since 1948 against the people of Palestine, is no longer predicated on apartheid or separation. This new stage, which is also directed against Israelis who want peace, consists in total appropriation as well as outright exclusion of the Palestinian people from their homeland. So they don't want them to have a state. They need to keep them out of there. There are basic lines of national government headed by Netanyahu. He says the Jewish people have an exclusive and unquestionable right to all areas of the land of Israel. The government will promote and develop settlement in all parts and land of Israel, in the Galilee, the Negev, the Golan, Judea and Samaria. It says, and that was from Netanyahu, January 2023. And it says, this is it. It's definitely a false flag, and this is a planned attack. And as I said, clear out Gaza, get the gas. very, very simple people. You couldn't make it any more simpler than that. Now, I wanted to touch on what was happening in Australia. So we just had another interest rate rise. Now, what that does in Australia, it's eventually going to force all the people that are on mortgages, these are the people that are paying off their houses, to relinquish their house. They're not going to be able to afford to meet the repayments for what the house is worth as it gets higher and higher to do the repayment, adding more and more to the cost of what they originally bought it for. That's how it works. And that's been going on for a while now. And we had the actual, I don't think it's a general manager, but we had Philip Lowy, who was the director or something like that of what was happening in Australia, which is with the Reserve Bank of Australia. And he recently quit. They always quit when the going gets tough and they put in a new person when all the eggs get thrown at. The problem is the agenda is rolling forward at breakneck speed. I found this other article that was also on the globalresearch.org site. And I thought this was, which is actually the globalresearch.ca. So there's two sites. But this this story sort of nailed it. This is about the WEF with the World Economic Forum with Klaus Schwab saying, you'll own nothing and be happy. They really, really mean that statement. It's not a made up sort of finger pointing thing. They actually want that to happen. Okay, and Elon Musk, he's ready to do his universal basic income. All these globalists, you thought, oh, that's a good one and that's a bad one. They're all bad because they have an agenda. Okay, it's the first part of the agenda is to fool the masses into thinking that everything's fine. And the second one is to pull the wool over your eyes. That's why you've got all these diversional things like wars going on, false flags everywhere. And then after that, they'll move in with the take all the property and put you into sort of camps and then eventually cull you because I'll own all the health services and whether you get the health service or not. It's it sounds really, really dystopian, like, nah, that could never happen. But it actually is. These things are formulating now as I speak. The entire world is now interconnected. This is what they wanted. And this is where it stays. It doesn't go back to what it was before with villages and separate things. You might find the odd one here and there in Europe and all around the world, but you know, it's not promoted. They don't want it. So the next generation are trained to get inside these matrixes. Now, this article is called Why a Global Government is the Ultimate Goal of Billionaires. The goal is for you to own nothing. Now, this is by Dr. Joseph McAuliffe, very well respected in the alternative media, has been waving the banner of freedom for a very long time, people. October the 7th, 2023. And this is, I read this article and I thought, this is brilliant. This is really what people need to hear because we have all these diversional things like I'm going on about Hamas in Israel and we're trying to work out what's happened there and what the end game is. Okay, we know they're going for the gas, but what comes after that? Okay, apart from control of a lot of people. It says in this article, the European Union's Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. And you're going, what? The legislative instrument that dictates the energy performance standards for buildings within the European Union will be used to achieve a massive wealth transfer scheme. And you're going, how? By 2030, the European Union must meet a minimum 55% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. And it says by 2050, they want every building, commercial, public and residential in the EU to meet zero emission standards. And it says to achieve that, they will impose a slew of new renewable energy requirements on homeowners. It says, for example, heating systems that use fossil fuels are to be completely phased out of existence by 2035. It's not that far off, people. Homeowners will be required to install new green, presumably electric, heating systems because they want to electrify everything and pay for it out of pocket. The cost of these new energy requirements are estimated to be around 100,000 euros for a residential house. The goal is to force people out of their homes. If you cannot afford the required upgrades, you'll be forced to sell your home. Asset management companies will then buy them and turn them into rentals. This is what they're going on about in Australia. Oh, there's not enough rentals. Well, you can see what they're about to introduce, even though the EU is already doing it. September the 20th, 2023, the United Nations General Assembly President approved a declaration on pandemic prevention. You know, I do remember when that happened, which assigns pandemic authority to the WHO. So they got it. That's what they wanted, total control of the next pandemic. without a full assembly vote and over the objections of 11 member states. The objections should have prevented a consensus adoption, the declaration, but the UN is skirting the rules by having the UN GA president, rather than the General Assembly, approve the declaration. So it's gone through, people. That's something I've been dreading, but it's through. So if another pandemic hits, you'll see Gates again and his mate, the Ethiopian guy, Dr. Ted Ross, pointing the finger, except this time they'll have more power. It says in March 2023, the EU Parliament voted to revise the directive as part of Fit for 55 package, which aims to meet a minimum 55% reduction of greenhouse gas emissions by 2030. It says by 2050, the EU intends to have zero emission and fully carbonised building stock. In short, by 2050, they want every building, commercial, public and residential, in the EU to meet zero emission standards. To achieve that, they will impose a slew of new requirements on homeowners. And it says, the goal is really for you to own nothing. It says, the goal, Bull Hansen explains, is to force people out of their homes. If you cannot afford the required upgrades, you'll be forced to sell your home. And asset management companies like BlackRock and Vanguard will stand at the ready to snatch these properties up. It says, and that's if you'll be allowed to sell a house that isn't up to standards. The government might just deem it unsellable and seize it, or you might have to pay a fine of some sort. It says in the US, BlackRock and Vanguard started bulk buying residential homes in earnest in early 2021, which they then rent out rather than resell, thereby eroding middle-class home ownership. That's exactly what's happening, people. That's why they want to rent stuff. They don't want to sell it. That's why the building industry is collapsing, because they don't want to build anything. They want to rent existing properties and just force the owners out. It says they artificially drive up home prices by paying above asking price, thereby pushing home ownership further out of reach. In Australia, they just keep raising interest rates. So it says, of course, the price of rent has also skyrocketed, and rentals will have to pay even more after these energy upgrades. So not only is home ownership something many young people can no longer achieve, many can't even afford to rent, and they are forced to live with their parents or multiple roommates. And it says we can eventually expect the number of homeless to skyrocket as well. See, in Australia, they just brought out 500,000 people with nowhere to place them. This is that's the plan. The plan is to look at the homeowners and say, well, you've got two or three spare bedrooms. You can put up the Iranian refugees or the Palestinian refugees. I mean, this is the goal, is to water it all down. This is what they want to do, people. It says, as noted by Bull Hansen, the elimination of personal property ownership is all part of the World Economic Forum's Great Reset Agenda. It's called Agenda 2030 and the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. These are just different names for the same overarching plan. It says the WS 8 predictions for the world in 2030 video, in which they cheerfully declare that by 2030 you will own nothing, spelled out many of the aspects of this global plan, including the goal to eliminate personal ownership rights. All products will become services, the WF explains on its website, and that means you will own nothing. And it's already starting to materialize, people. Think about people in their 20, maybe 25, 35, think of their homes. Even 40-year-olds, think of their homes. They are minimalized. All bookshelves are gone. You don't see any libraries anymore. Bookshelves are gone. CDs, DVDs don't exist. It's all subscription-based. That's the beginning of it. That's how you train the public to own nothing. And eventually people won't even own their own cars. This is very, very interesting stuff, people, because it means you're handing over control, because of this climate change crazy stuff, to the people, the very people that are actually pushing it. That's what's eventually going to happen. So it says, 8 predictions for the world in 2030. This is from the World Economic Forum. And this is straight from the horse's mouth. This is what they want. So take heed, because this is what will actually materialize as I say it, because this is what they're trying to achieve. This shouldn't happen, people. Now, this is from November the 12th, 2016. They know what they're doing, people. That's why you need to recognize what they're doing. It's the only way you can stop it. It says, gone will be the days when you buy something once and can use it indefinitely because you own it. Instead, the new system they're pushing us into will require you to rent everything. It says your home, transportation, furniture, pots and pans, and all the rest. You'll probably notice this creep already. It says, for example, you used to be able to buy a piece of software which came on a disk. You could install it and reinstall that program on any computer you wanted because you had the CD. Today, most software programs are cloud-based subscriptions, and you have to pay a monthly or annual fee for as long as you're using it. And while the fee may be low, once you add it up over a lifetime of use, you'll end up paying many more times for what you did when you were able to buy it outright. That's a very good point, that one, people. Now it says, home ownership has always been a wealth-building strategy. Very true. Now, actually, that was still an excerpt from the actual story. I've now jumped to the 8 prediction for the world in 2030, which is actually on weforum.org. So November the 12th, 2016, and this is stuff that really, really needs, because you need to recognize what they're trying to do. If you don't, you're going to be distracted by all these world events all the time, because that's the whole point of this. The whole point is for you not to actually pay attention. So it says here, one, all products will become services. And it says, I don't own anything. I don't own a car. I don't own a house. I don't own any appliances or any clothes, writes Danish MP Ida Auken. Shopping is a distant memory in the city of 2030, whose inhabitants have cracked clean energy and borrow what they need on demand. It sounds utopian, until she mentions that her every move is tracked and outside the city life swathes of discontents, the ultimate depiction of society split in two. Now, that's the first one. So it says two, there is a global price on carbon. It says China took the lead in 2017 with a market for trading the right to emit a ton of CO2, setting the world on a path towards a single carbon price and a powerful incentive to ditch fossil fuels, predicts Jane Burston, head of climate and environment at the UK's National Physical Laboratory. Europe, meanwhile, found itself at the centre of trade in cheap, efficient solar panels as prices for renewables fell sharply. Number three, US dominance is over. We have a handful of global powers. Nation states will have staged a comeback, writes Robert Mugar, research director at the IGARAP Institute. Instead of a single force, a handful of countries, the US, I told you people, this is how they all join together. The US, Russia, China, Germany, India, and Japan, chief among them, show semi-imperial tendencies. However, at the same time, the role of the state is threatened by trends, including the rise of cities and the spread of online identities. So it says, four, farewell hospital, hello home spittle. Technology will have further disrupted disease, writes Melanie Walker, a medical doctor and World Bank advisor. The hospital, as we know, will be on its way out, with fewer accidents thanks to self-driving cars and great strides in preventative and personalized medicine. Scalpels and organ donors are out. Tiny robotic tubes and bio-printed organs are in. We're getting up to number five. Number five, we are eating much less meat. Rather like our grandparents, we will treat meat as a treat rather than a staple, writes Tim Benton, Professor of Population Ecology at the University of Leeds, UK. It won't be big agricultural or little artesian producers that win, but rather a combination of the two, with convenience food redesigned to be healthier and less harmful to your environment. So they are genetically modifying food as I speak, and they will write meat out. It says six, today's Syrian refugees, 2030's CEOs. It says highly educated Syrian refugees will have come of age by 2030, making the case for economic integration of those who have been forced to flee conflict. And here we have Israel and Palestine people, so get ready for the Palestinian refugee. It says the world needs to be better prepared for populations on the move, writes Lorna Solis, founder and CEO of the NGO Blue Rose Compass, as climate change will have displaced 1 billion people, really. It says here, number 7, the values that built the West will have been tested to breaking point. It says we forget the checks and balances that bolster our democracies at our peril, writes Kenneth Roth, Executive Director of Human Rights Watch. And it says 8, by the 2030s, we'll be ready to move humans towards the red planet. This is what Musk wants to do. Put a McDonald's on Mars, McMars. It says, what's more, once we get there, we'll probably discover evidence of alien life. Of course you will, writes Ellen Stofan, chief scientist at NASA. Big science will help us to answer big questions about life on Earth, as well as opening up practical applications for space technology. Get ready for the Hollywood blockbuster. It'll be the real thing, people. They'll say, we're on Mars. And you'll go, hang on, is this like the moon landing? Except in HD. Right, now going back to the original article that I was reading, I was up to home ownership has always been a wealth-building strategy. It says, as noted by Bull Hansen, home ownership defines the middle class. Now, this is really important to listen to this, people. More importantly, it's been a way to build and secure generational wealth for ages. Remove the ability for people to buy their own home and you effectively eliminate the middle class, leaving just the very rich and the very poor. It doesn't matter if you believe this will be good for the environment or not, Bull Hansen says. This is about controlling you. This is about owning you. This is a wealth transfer that we're looking at, and we can't accept that. Ownership is important. It's a very, very essential concept. If you take ownership away and you're left with feudalism, someone's going to own the stuff that you need and they will be so-called elites. So we must put our foot down and refuse to accept this. It is like feudalism. It's like the king and queen own the land and that you just live on it, but you don't own it. Remember that? All the farmers that grow all the crops have to give it back to the king and queen. Same concept. So it says disobedience is our only way out. Okay, it says. So what do we do about this? And it says, I second Bull Hansen's call for peaceful disobedience. This is the writer, Dr. McCullough. It says, we must be disobedient now, he says. The alternative is to accept serfdom. So true, people. It says, and again, the coming slave system is not merely about removing human rights and eliminating freedoms we've enjoyed our whole lives. Even simple things such as having the freedom to travel wherever you choose, whenever you want, is also about stripping us of our wealth and eliminating the possibility of building wealth in the future. That's the key to it. They don't want you to get to that next rung of the ladder. They want to actually kick the ladder away so you can't reach them anymore. That's the whole point. It says they're not just trying to take away your ability to own a home and build generational wealth that way, because that's what's been happening. That's why you got a lot of kids living at home and the parents pass on and leave the house to them and on it goes. That's how the generational wealth thing is. They want to kill that. It says, with a central bank digital currency, the CBDC I talked about last week, you won't make interest on your money and they'll take your taxes out automatically. They'll also have the ability to dictate where and when you can spend your money on and put expiration dates on your funds so that you can never save up for a rainy day. That's what that's all about. It is so dangerous, people. It says the globalist cabal behind the entire agenda intends to create a permanent slave class. Remember, the word robot also means slave, people, that has no rights, no freedoms, and no way out. It says if you go along with these green proposals, which is what they're using to justify this particular wealth transfer scheme, then you are actively choosing poverty and slavery for yourself. your children, and all your descendants thereafter. Because dismantling this global system of control will be unimaginably difficult once it's in place. And it says, how are you going to rebel when the government can seize your bank accounts at will, lock you out of grocery stores, send you to an infectious control internment camp to protect public health, even though you're not sick, program your electric vehicle such as it only runs within a specific designated area, and punish everyone you know in the same way, simply because they know you? All of that and much more will be possible once the AI-run digital surveillance and control grid is fully implemented and linked to your digital identity, a programmable CBDC, and the unified ledger system. This is absolutely on the ball, people. As noted by Bull Hansen, there will be ramifications for disobedience and refusal to go along with the globalist green agenda. But if we agree to pay the price now and refuse en masse, this globalist power grab will absolutely fail. They cannot do it without mass obedience. And it says, who's looking to rule the world? It's so interesting, people. If this topic is new to you, you might be wondering who these globalists are that are trying to effect this global coup. I'm not going to name this as the author. I'm not going to name names here, although it's getting easier by the day to identify the individuals who are part of the club by examining their public statements and stances, their business endeavours and affiliations. The reason for this is because most are no longer even trying to hide their involvement, and the organisations erected to drive the agenda forward are becoming more and more open about their goals. For example, June the 5th, 2023, the United Nations published a document spelling out its commitment to make the World Health Organization the central global governance body. The following excerpt is from page 9 of the zero draft of the Political Declaration of the United Nations General Assembly High-Level Meeting on Pandemic Prevention, Preparedness and Response. The document drafted in advance on September the 20th, 2023, General Assembly Meeting. And it says, Global Governments, the OP18, strengthen international collaboration and coordination for pandemic prevention, preparedness and response at the highest political level to accelerate efforts to ensure international, national, regional and local readiness for future pandemics and health emergencies. It says OP19, commit to promote the full potential of the multilateral system and call upon the relevant entities of the United Nations development system within their respective mandates, primarily the World Health Organization, as the directing and coordinating authority on international health work in accordance with its constitution, as well as the reinvigorated resident coordinators and the United Nations country teams within their respective mandates, as well as other relevant global development and health actors, including civil society, the private sector, and academia, to assist and support countries in their efforts to achieve pandemic prevention, preparedness and response at the national level, in accordance with their respective national context, priorities and competences. There you go. That's like two directives gone straight in, but they put the World Health Organization at the helm. It says the final text of this document was published September the 1st, 2023. And in that version, all of the headings have been removed. But the overall intent to make the WHO de facto governing body for the world remains unchanged. While the document focuses on the WHO's authority to dictate, pandemic prevention and response worldwide, as the author detailed in several previous articles, the WHO will not only be in charge of pandemics, that's just the jurisdiction they use to get its foot in the door. Next, the WHO will move into general health care by advancing the acceptance of a universal health care system. This will be promoted under the banner of Enhancing Pandemic Prevention, Preparedness and Response, as detailed on page 11 of the OP33 in the Zero Draft and under Article 22 in the final text. Then, through the Global One Health Program, which expands public health to include everything from agriculture to pollution and travel and climate change, the WHO, or some spin-off thereof, will take over all government functions. The final text of the UN's political declaration even declares that health is an indicator of sustainable development, thereby directly linking the WHO's pandemic authority to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals and Agenda 2030. And they've got like a little picture of One Health, and they've got this human health, environment and animal health, and they've all joined it together with nice colours, and it's gone on about diet, food security, antibiotics and other antimicrobials, and then it's got intensive livestock farming, disease vectors, biodiversity loss, deforestation, this is all together in the same thing, air pollution, water pollution, climate change, population movements, interesting one, and social determinants. Very interesting how that's all combined into one health now, people. And reading on, it says, lawlessness reigns. It says, making matters all the more dire for the people of the world is the fact that governments and global organizations involved in this power grab are increasingly flouting rules, guidelines, laws, and treaties that previously have ensured at least some semblance of democracy and the rule of law. One of the latest examples of this is the United Nations General Assembly, President's approval of the Declaration of the Pandemic Prevention. This is a document discussed above. Without a full assembly vote and over the objections of 11 member states, which is Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Eritrea, the Islamic Republic of Iran, Nicaragua and the Russian Federation, the Syrian Arab Republic, Venezuela and Zimbabwe. According to Francis Boyle, JD, PhD, a bioweapons expert and professor of international law at the University of Illinois, who drafted the Biological Weapons Anti-Terrorism Act of 1989, the objections by 11 nations should prevent this declaration from being adopted by a consensus and thus arguably becoming part of customary international law, which is what those behind the declaration intend. They could not get it through the UNGA as a consensus resolution because of the 11 objecting states, Boyle told The Defender. They are trying to spin it and misrepresent it by having the UNGA president, not the UNGA, approve the declaration. And it says a UN declaration calls for universal vaccinations and more. It says the fact that the UN General Assembly president is creating loopholes where there are none is particularly disturbing in light of the fact that the declaration makes the COVID-19 power grabs permanent and calls for universal vaccination, increased surveillance, vaccine passports, social media censorship, and an integrated One Health approach, which the author explained is the primary way by which the WHO will end up governing all aspects of human life. You've got Gates at the top of that, people. So we can see that even when countries disagree and push back, the UN leadership simply skirts the rules and follows the deep state plan anyway. And that's precisely the kind of behaviour we can expect from a one world government. They'll have rules for themselves, which they'll conveniently ignore when it suits them, and fixed rules with harsh penalties for the rest of the plebs, as reported by The Defender, September the 20th, 2023. It says critics called the declaration, which seeks to create a global pandemic authority with the power to enforce lockdowns, universal vaccination, and censorship of misinformation, hypocrisy, and unhinged. The approval came as part of a high-level meeting of the PPR, the PPPR, that's the Pandemic Prevention Preparedness and Response, and it says in a statement, the WHO Director General, there he is, Dr. Tedros Adhanom, I can never say Mr. G's full name, so I'll just leave it at that, said, if COVID-19 taught us nothing else, it's that when health is at risk, everything is at risk. He linked the PPPR to the UN's Sustainable Development Goals, saying world leaders should show they have learned the painful lessons of the pandemic. It says, writing for the Brownstone Institute, Dr. David Bell, a public health physician, biotech consultant, and former director of global health technologies at Intellectual Venture Global, good fun, that's a mouthful, people, said the main aim of the declaration is to back the pandemic treaty. And the IHR amendments currently under negotiation by the WHO member states. Bell said a silence procedure is in place, meaning that the states not responding will be deemed supporters of the text. He said the text is clearly contradictory, sometimes fallacious, and often quite meaningless, and intended to centralise the WHO's power. So countries that are not saying anything are looked upon by this group as agreeing. Bell told the Defender, the declaration was not written with serious intent, but is essentially empty rhetoric promoting a continued centralisation of control that the UN and the WHO are openly seeking, at the expense of democracy, human rights, and equality. It's got Francis Boyle agreed. This is a full court press to have the entirety of the United Nations organization, its specialized agencies, and its affiliated organizations back up and support their proposed globalist WHO worldwide totalitarian medical and scientific police state, he said. And it says, in recent years, the last three in particular, the deep state global mafia has gotten more and more open about its plans. That said, even decades ago, the plan for a new world order, a one world government, was there for anyone to see. They discussed it in published white papers and reports. They hinted at it in movies and entertainment. They divulged it in tabletop exercises. Why do they always reveal their plan? Wouldn't it be more sensible to keep it secret so that people don't know what's coming and therefore won't put up a fight? As it turns out, there's a method to the apparent madness. And there's a video attached to this too, people. It's called Revealing the Method, Esoteric Symbolism as Mind Control. And it explains it in a summary. The agenda for a global government system uses massed mind control to condition people to loss of personal power by promoting and getting us used to three types of loss. One loss. Number one, loss of memory, amnesia. Two, loss of will or initiative. That's called abulia. And loss of three, loss of interest in which is vital to one's health and well-being, which is apathy. Yeah, it's all happening. All those things are happening, people. And you got your mental health departments and everyone's gone mental and they have to get looked at, and it is gone like that. It is now a treatment. Like, if you don't feel well, then maybe you've got mental problems and you need to go to the mental department and see a mental doctor. Someone should bring back that band, Mental as Anything. They're probably at the top of their game now. It says, these three psychological conditions are required for the global cabal to successfully implement a global government. Mind control methods used by the cabal to promote these conditions include the subversion of sacred symbolism and archetypes. Now, this is interesting. I don't know about any of these people. So I'm just reading this as I'm saying it. It says, I'm actually saying it as I'm reading it. Actually, get that right. That's pretty funny. It says, with the use of occult esoteric symbols, they appeal to mankind's lower instincts, animalistic appetites, convulsive urges, and inharmonious drives that conflict with an individual's higher conscious nature. The goal is to arrest the spiritual development of the individual and stifle the evolution of spirit within society. Now, this is getting a bit wishy-washy, so I'll keep going. I'm wondering what the symbolism is, but it's starting to go a little bit off-center. It says, putting their mark on everything they do also is an ego-driven facet of the cabal's megalomania. It proclaims their dominance to each other and subconsciously to the masses, while simultaneously mocking those that they view as inferior. Now, you can see it. If you go on news channels and you see the news readers, they'll do something with their hands. If they're standing there, you can see their hands, and you'll see them do a steeple. It's where they join all the fingers together and sort of wave it in front of them. That's a real globalist symbol, that one. That's like a dominant thing. So if they're telling you news about something, they want that news to be dominant over you, for you to utterly believe it. I know that's a very, very simple sort of explanation in symbolism, but it's a real thing. You will see it. You know, it's a bit like when someone's wearing a pair of glasses and they're like a boss, and they put the glasses and lower them on their nose, and they look at you above the glasses. That's also a superiority thing too. There's many, many symbolism. A lot of this stuff does tie in with body language. I do understand what they're saying about trying to manipulate a population's mind through symbolism. It does have effect. Let me read on and see what they say. It says, one particularly interesting aspect of the cabal's use of symbolism is that the symbol typically means the exact opposite of the mainstream consensus view of its meaning. For example, the hammer and sickle symbol found on the flag of the former Soviet Union is commonly thought to represent tools of the working class, industry and agriculture. The idea is a working class utopia. The occult meaning, however, which predates the Soviet Union, is that of Saturn, the demiurge who used a sickle to sever the unity of earth and heaven. Having separated Earth from the divine, Saturn became the architect of the material world. In emulation of Saturn, the cabal is also engrossed with matters of the material world, owning it, shaping it, controlling it. It says the hammer, meanwhile, represents the obliteration of matter, the final act of chaotic destruction to usher in the new order. It is the instrument that shatters the last remnants of divine will within mankind. It says, in a process in which man devolves and descends further into the post-human world. This is the world of automation, people, and robots, and all those systems that will make people obsolete, even the thinking part with the AI. So you can see the globalists are at that point now. They're at a precipice where they can get rid of the huge populations of the planet and have the Garden of Eden for themselves. That's the goal, people. It says, the hammer and the sickle then, seen from an occult perspective, denotes the tyrannical rule of an elite class intent of separating mankind from the divine and ultimately destroying it. Its occult meaning is that of a divided dystopia, the opposite of a unified utopia. And the author recommends viewing the video, which goes into much greater detail than this short summary. If nothing else, it's food for thought. And I do agree with that. I do agree that they do use symbolism and all sorts of stuff to get you to think a certain way. They actually do. Body language is very powerful as well. All these things are used to get, because they're not actually shooting you just yet, but they're thinking about it. So while they're thinking about it, they're trying to get to try and win you over. Because remember, the best way to control a population is for the population to control itself. In other words, instead of making a huge police force, which I know they do want to do with the Chinese, they actually get the people to police themselves by, after they've won them over and said, yes, it's climate change, everyone's going to die if we don't meet the emissions, then they'll one by one get them to dob in their neighbours. That's how it works. So you don't even need a huge police force. You just need something to monitor all the incoming dobbings in, you could say, and to sort of work out who's guilty and who isn't. It's a bit like reporting on things. When you play online games, you can report someone for doing something wrong in the game. It's the same thing. And all the kids have been trained to do that. So they're ready to go. You see, that's how the online games work too with all the kids. It trains them to be subservient, obey, follow the rules, and if someone doesn't, dob them in. very, 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 very parallel to what the New World Order wants from its future inhabitants, because the rest they don't want. They actually want you to be gone from the planet. They don't want old people's homes. They don't want you to survive to elderly age. They want to make sure you are gone. That's what euthanasia will be all about in the future, and they're pushing that as well, something chronically. Anyway, I did think it was worth mentioning that globalist perspective. I know a lot of people read about it all the time, and I've talked about it, but I thought that was pretty clear, because it was tying in with the real world with owning homes and how they want to get you out of your home. I have asked people on the inside government, that is it a real thing that they could implement this these rules about homes with emissions? And I've been met with sort of an ums and ahs, and they're not sure on that level. So I'm thinking, you know, Australia may be a little while off before it happens to us, but it will happen. Because if it happens everywhere first, it's going to happen here eventually. And that's really what I wanted to know. I just wanted to know is when. Is there a timeline for when people's homes will be done in such a way and have to be so energy efficient and sustainably correct that you may not be able to meet those obligations simply because of the cost? People are losing their homes now just because of interest rates. Another cost on top of that would be the nail in the proverbial coffin. Absolutely. And then in comes BlackRock and Vanguard to sweep up all those properties as well. So I'm just telling you, people, it is a real thing. This is an actual possibility that homes could be swept up. And then, of course, they'll say, oh, we're just going to rent them out. Well, that's all part of owning nothing and apparently being happy. That's it. Makes sense to me. Oh, and before I forget, two people, on the if you go to conspiracyoz.com like I have, on the left-hand side of the widget bar, you'll see I put up a new widget. And it's got two big giant words, ceasefire now. It's a petition, people. You want to go and sign it. It's an open call for an immediate ceasefire in the Gaza Strip and Israel. And it's up to about 800,000 signatures. And it's only been going for probably a week and a half, so it's gaining foot. If you want to get in there and put your name on it to stop this senseless destruction of people, just for gas, because it's the Gaza Strip, get in there and sign it, people, because this needs to stop. This is the bigger picture, okay, and it's not good. If people sit by and let people be killed, it's only a matter of time before it's in your backyard. So we need to stop this, all right, because this is the beginning of a global takeover. Just like China's in Xinjiang and they've taken over those 2 or 3 million people there, here's another one starting up. There's also Pakistan's just kicked out a whole bunch of people in an area there as well, near their border. So, and that's like 1 million displaced people as well or something. So you can see that this is a bit of a snowball for the rest of the world. And, you know, and Putin's now pushing hard into Ukraine. So there's a lot of very big problems worldwide, and we need to be aware that we need to start stopping these problems now, okay? Because in the long run, if they don't, people, and this global war thing starts to escalate all over the planet, you know what they may do in the West? Because they don't have to do it in the third world, because it's been happening there for thousands of years. But in the West, the nice modern West, it's sort of sitting on its laurels, and having the odd war, like the Vietnam War, the Korean War, and before that, World War One and Two. There's an article here from TheHill.com, and I thought this was extremely interesting because I haven't heard about this. This is something that's not talked about much, especially in the West, that I used to divulge on it when I used to think about, you know, like the Ukraine is having a war with Russia, but they don't call it a war. Israel is having a war with its neighbors, but they don't really want to call it a war. It's not like the red team, blue team, really. There's not defined borders and of war. It's an expansion all over the place. In other words, to put it in context, in World War II, it was a territorial war with an ideology, but these wars like the Middle East are religious-based. Even though there's obviously an agenda beyond it, they're using the fact that religion is still controlling masses of the population worldwide, and they're using it to pitch one against the other. So in a future war, if there's wars all over the place, what's going to happen in the West? What's really going to happen in the West is they will do this. This is the headline of this article. It says, bring back the draft. It says the divisive home front battle will loom over any major war. And I thought that was really interesting. I've seen this nowhere else except in this publication. And it says, this is on the 3rd of November, 2023. It says, is the US on the cusp of a three-front world war against Russia, Iran, and China. It says, if such a seismic event were to occur, would the nation's 50-year-old all-volunteer force require a boost from, dare the author says it, a reinstatement of the draft? It says it was January the 27th, 1973, when most American men aged 19 to 25 were able to celebrate President Richard Nixon's abolition of the draft. Defense Secretary Melvin Laird announced, I wish to inform you that the armed forces henceforth will depend exclusively on volunteer soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines. So this is the time when they said that people can't be signed up and forced to go. I knew a fellow that was forced to go to the Vietnam War. And he had, like I've mentioned this before, probably many times on the podcast, but he had a very promising singing career. And he was only 19. That's like the song. And he was sent to Vietnam and he did not come back the same person. In fact, he came back as an alcoholic for 40 years until he revived his musical career and tried to get back on top of it. This is a real problem. People get uprooted from something and thrown into something they have absolutely no idea about, and they have to become good at it in a short time. So it says, although Jimmy Carter later reinstated the draft registration, American men have escaped mandatory military service for two generations because millions of their patriotic brothers and sisters were willing to serve voluntarily, with thousands of them laying down their lives for their country. There were 2,324 military deaths in Afghanistan, along with 3,917 US contractor deaths. Iraq was equally costly, with 4,431 military lives lost and 31,994 wounded. Many others still suffer from conditions such as post-traumatic stress disorder. So it says, undoubtedly, the two 9/11 related wars took a toll on recruitment. One factor is a decline in patriotism. A June Gallup poll found that only 18% of 18 to 34-year-olds said they were extremely proud to be American. However, there are numerous reasons why fewer young Americans are enlisting. So obviously this story is about the US people, but it doesn't matter. It's really the West. You could be talking about the UK or Australia or France or anywhere else, and it's the same premise. The youth will not fight. They won't do it. So it says in late August, a 10-page bombshell article, a call to action, lessons from the Ukraine for the future force, was posted on Parameters, the Army War College's quarterly journal. The essay explained why the 1970s concept of an all-volunteer force has outlived its shelf life and does not align with the current operating environment. Katie Kroom and John A. Nagel, whose credentials cannot be lightly dismissed, wrote that the U.S. Army is facing a dire combination of a recruiting shortfall and a shrinking individual ready reserve. The shrink they cite is alarming. Now, put the opposite to that. Look at China, who has a ridiculously big army, all signed up, virtually at gunpoint too, but all nevertheless ready to go. And then you also have Russia, who experienced a lot of people wanting to go AWOL because of the Ukraine conflict, but now it seems to be stabilizing and they're ready to go forward. So reading on, it says, the individual ready reserve, this is in the US, which stood at 700,000 in 1973 and 450,000 in 1994, wait for this people, stands now at just 76,000. It says these numbers cannot fill the existing gaps in the active force, let alone any casualty replacement or expansion during a large-scale combat operation. As reflected in the title, the authors outline strategic lessons from Ukraine, including the conflict's casualty rates for future planning purposes. The lessons all point to their call to action for the US military. Kroom and Nagel also warn the technological revolution described below suggests that these forces have reached obsolescence. large-scale combat operation troop requirements may well require a reconceptualization of the 1970s and the 1980s volunteer force and a move towards partial conscription. Reinstating the draft or partial conscription would unleash powerful social, political, and cultural shockwaves throughout America. After 50 years, any conscription, no matter how partial, would be off the charts contentious. It says, in addition to traditional ethical and constitutional concerns, it is hard even to imagine how well the hell no, we won't go of the 1960s would catch on in a modern era of social media. Many military-age youth would protest conscription as a violation of their individual liberty, even when the draft is not deadly. It can sidetrack the lives of young men or even women if they are made to register for years. A draft may also force many to participate in activities that potentially contravene, wait for it, people, their moral, religious, or personal beliefs. Just imagine if conscription were deemed essential to help defend our ally Israel. War would break out on college campuses, would it not? So it says, as in the Vietnam era, a draft could also disproportionately affect disadvantaged communities. That's what they used to do in war. It's called cannon fodder. Families with more resources often find ways to avoid conscription. So true, people. Whereas those of lesser means are more likely to bear the greater burden. Even where this doesn't happen, the suspicion that it does will intensify resentments. Okay? This can't happen. People won't fight. The youth won't fight each other, people. They won't fight anyone. This is why the globalists will put in a military control through the Chinese, and the population will willfully do as it's told in a surveyed system, just like the Chinese have it. That's what I'm telling you, people. They're going to walk right into it. There won't even be a fight. And the enemy to the globalists is not they don't like nations and flag waving. It's just people. They don't like people. Okay? So anyway, reading on, it says, nonetheless, with warring headlines from the Middle East, combined with Ukraine's lessons and warnings from Crome and Nagel, published 6 weeks before Hamas attacked Israel, one imagines the Pentagon is forecasting its conscription needs just in case. The potential for the US to help defend Israel against Iran's proxies, Hamas and Hezbollah, could turn into a more expansive and prolonged war with American boots on the ground engagement, which is actually nearly happening, people. Simultaneously, Ukraine's fight against its Russian invaders continues to strain American stockpiles of military hardware and ammunition that are also needed for Israel. So you can see what's going on here, people. Meanwhile, the Israeli conflict could negatively affect US military recruitment. Even before the Hamas attack, every branch was falling short of its goals except for the smaller Marine Corps. According to the Department of Defense, for 2023, the Army is short 15,000 recruits. The Navy is down 10,000 and the Air Force is down 3,000. It says, with those statistics in mind, think back to what happened on October the 19th when several major news outlets were forced to fact check a deepfake AI video showing President Joe Biden announcing the reinstatement of the draft. I don't think I saw that, people. In this video, initially posted in February, Biden appears to state that he will invoke the Selective Services Act, as it is his authority as president. False. That is the job of Congress, it says. The video concludes with Biden saying, remember, you are not sending your sons and daughters to war. You are sending them to freedom. God bless our troops and God bless Ukraine. That's funny. It says that a bizarre Ukraine sign-off was another clue that the video was also inauthentic. Israel was attacked on October the 7th. And the February video resurfaced days afterwards on Facebook and TikTok. And they've got a link where you can watch it there. So I'll put the link up and you can look at that too, people. It says, the USA Today noted the fake short-lived draft announcement was shared more than 400 times in 4 days and on TikTok more than 20,000 times in 5 days. So It's not really a big distribution, but what they're saying is that it made people think about the draft, you say. It says, naturally, there was outrage and profanities from those who believe Biden's deep fake AI-generated draft call. Since 1980, the Selective Service has required men aged 18 to 25 to register and participate in a national draft lottery. Should the president and Congress reinstate conscription due to a national emergency? At any time, Congress could modify the law to require female registration as well. But everyone knows that reinstating the draft will spark a fierce domestic battle, detracting from the war effort. It says after 50 years, a 21st century draft would be a national nightmare. But could reinstating a draft be worse than potentially losing a major war? And it says, let's hope Americans don't have to answer that question. I thought that was very, very interesting, people, because of the angle it was coming from, saying something about the draft and making people think, well, hang on, if these wars get out of hand, this is going to give the globalists, slash government, a chance to get rid of a lot of people, very young people. I mean, they don't care, people. They'll take the older people out with euthanasia, they'll take the kids out that aren't born with abortion, and they'll do these wars. If it comes to that, they'll do it. They don't have a problem. So that's what I'm saying. This is a possibility. It's actually not something to just shirk off and say that can't happen, because it actually could. Now, I'm actually at the end of the podcast, but I do want to touch on some things that are happening in society, especially in the West. There's a lot of talk now about getting people to work four-day weeks. Now, you would have heard about that in your workplace. They're all talking about some people are actually doing it. It's not a mystery thing. And one of them entails, instead of working 5 days a week for X amount of hours, they're going to squash those hours into 4 days. So you'll have longer days, but a shorter work week. That's the intention. My take on it is that, yes, people will adopt it, and it will give people more jobs. Because if people are only working 4 days a week, if you add that up over a few weeks, there's a spot for someone else to work 4 days a week. And on it goes. That's how they plug the unemployment back into the workforce, especially the 500,000 who just brought out from overseas that Prime Minister Albo did. But what my take on it is, yes, it'll work in the short term. Then guess what they'll do, people? They'll get people to work the fifth day for longer hours. Then you'll be doing your 50-hour week. And it'll be a bit like the olden days when they used to get the kids down in the mines, underage, working 10-hour days. Actually, I think it was 14-hour days back in the day. And this is it. So it's a regression of our rights absolutely trashed upon, where people think they're getting the utopia they're heading towards, but we're heading into more wars, more catastrophes, and the globalists have told you they want you to own nothing. So the idea is to strip you of all your personal belongings and be in complete subservience to the New World Order as a serf in serfdom. This is really what they're trying to do, and they may nearly get away with it. They've got the third world on side all thinking that they're going to move up the ladder, which they're not. And they've got the West thinking if they don't implement these green policies, they're all going to choke to death on their own carbon dioxide. Utterly ridiculous. Anyway, I'll try and talk about that next week. And there's other things I wanted to talk about. The PFAS, again, that's reared its ugly head as well. Lots of topics. I'll keep on top of what's happening in Israel, of course, and the Ukraine, because we don't really talk about Ukraine anymore, do we now, people? But it's still happening. As I said, go to conspiracyhealth.com on the left-hand side of the widget bar. Search out the livemap.com. I've got two of them up there. Just click on the Israeli one or click on the Ukraine one, and you can see in real time all the reports that pop up on the right-hand side as you click the icons on the map that you can zoom in and out on. Absolutely amazing. All right, people, looks like I'm at the end of the podcast. This is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Tuesday, the 7th of November, 2023. Thanks for listening. Over and out.